RadioInfluence.com.
Welcome to the October 2nd, 2019 edition of the MMA Report Podcast with Daniel Galvan. I am Jason Floyd, and come up here on this week's edition of the show. We're going to get things kicked off by talking about what happened last weekend. We had multiple Bellator events, plus we had the UFC Fight Night card, so we're going to recap everything that happened there, some of our major takeaways, and various thoughts that we have about what we saw last weekend. Then it's going to be the interview portion of the podcast. You're going to hear my conversation with Lewis Smolka, who's going to recap his TKO win against Ryan McDonald that took place there at UFC Vancouver. Also, you're going to hear my conversation with Tyler Diamond, who's got a short notice fight coming up on Saturday at Pure Combat in his hometown there in California. He's actually supposed to fight for the LFA title. However, that event was canceled as LFA is getting their television situation handled. So you'll hear my conversation with Tyler Diamond. He does talk a little bit about the LFA situation and basically how this fight got together, which he actually got this fight on Monday. So a very short notice opportunity for him. Then after the interviews, we are going to preview this weekend's Bellator 229 and UFC 243. We'll give you our top five fights, discuss our under the radar fights and various other aspects about those cards. And then we're going to wrap up this week's edition of the podcast by talking some MMA news and notes. We'll talk about Wanderlei Silva, no longer under contract with Bellator, and depending on who you listen to, he's either signed with Bare Knuckle or he's in talks with Bare Knuckle. Also, we'll talk about Nick Newell officially signing with Bellator and who his opponent is for Bellator 232. Daniel, man, how's it going, man?
Jason, it's going good. We got a whole lot of mixed martial arts to talk about, and I think weeks in which we have Bellator running head to head against the UFC. I tell you what, Jason, I got to give a huge, huge victory to Bellator. And it's more than just like we're talking about a C-level UFC show versus an A-level Bellator show. Honestly, when I watch the Bellator product, when I watch Bellator 228 and I watch the quarterfinals being set up and everything, the general production of Bellator's promotion to me feels a lot more entertaining. I don't know what it is. I can't really put my finger on it. But I'm much more engaged with the Bellator product when it's on than the UFC product.
Here would be my thought on that. It's more of an emphasis on the fighters than it is the promotion brand.
That's a great point. That's a great point, and I think you can really point towards that. Because, again, you look at what we just got out of the UFC, and if you took the card away from me, I would have a hard time telling you what happened. I need a prompt. I need to be reminded about Ian Cutelaba and Khalil Rountree. I need to be reminded about Dalby and Oliveira. Like, it's just so monotonous. The Gilbert Burns Gunnar Nelson fight is not something I'm necessarily going to remember a month from now. The next time Gilbert Burns fights, I'm going to have to rewatch this one to remember exactly what happened, because it is super monotonous, and that's a good point. And granted, it's not every Bellator card that's a hit or miss. I mean, literally, as great as Bellator 228 was, Bellator 227 was a whole lot less interesting. So, I mean, it's not like Bellator is just constantly cracking home runs and whatnot, but Bellator 228 to me was a home run, and they didn't need to get lucky. Like, they didn't need to have an amazing main event. Musashi Machida was boring as hell, but I still enjoyed the Bellator 228.
Yeah, I mean, I enjoy Bellator 228. I mean, when you look at the Friday Bellator show, if you're going to go back and watch one fight, you got to go back and watch Peter Quigley versus Ryan Scope. First round, kind of a back and forth thing. And then second round, Ryan Scope drops Peter. And, I mean, looks like he is moments away from potentially finishing the fight. And to me, he just, ran out of gas. And then Peter goes out there and gets a TKO win. It looked like Peter was, like, on the verge of losing there in the opening second round. So if you're going to go watch any fight from the Dublin event, That's the fight to go watch. You know, Bellator 228 mentioned how great it was. I mean, the UFC, I think one of the part you mentioned about how, you know, you won't, maybe won't remember what Ian Kutalabe versus Cleo Roundtree was. And I think part of that just has to do with just the amount of UFC fights that we do have. And I mean, look, it's not going to change at all. And I think that sometimes, you know, you can sit there and say, hey, we wish we had more Bellator events than we do. But I think it separates it and makes Bellator's fights a little more special. I mean, you know, I think they've got a decent card on Friday night with Bellator 229. But, you know, when I think of, you know, Bellator 228, I mean, look, it's all about that featherweight tournament. And one of the things we wanted to do here when talking about the featherweight tournament is our power rankings for the eight fighters left. I mean, look, when you talk about Bellator 228, there is no doubt that the performance of the night was AJ McKee. And to me, he has clearly cemented himself as the number two guy in this field.
Yeah, I think so too. And obviously, we all know number one is the champion, Patricio Pitbull. And we had the same list there. But the thing is, you put McKee at two, and I really feel like a lot of people are going to have a similar three and four. Could be wrong here. But I think in January, we're going to get number three versus number four in Adam Borax versus Darian Caldwell. That is on my list, the three and four guys. And I have it in reverse order. I have Caldwell at three, Borax at four. But that's really interchangeable. And the reason why I have Caldwell just a higher than Borax is because of I've seen it more often with Caldwell. I've seen him against higher quality competition for a longer period of time. And even though I might pick Adam Borax over Darian Caldwell, I know Caldwell is not afraid to lay and pray and steal a fight. So actually my three and four are Borax and Caldwell. If we're power ranking, are you differing than me?
Oh yeah. I'm way different.
What do you got?
Darian Caldwell is number six for me.
He's number six?
Yes.
Wow. Okay.
Here's the thing about Darian Caldwell. Okay. You know, he has gone through another gym change, going back to a gym he was initially from, and I'm seeing the same Darian Caldwell that we have seen. And I think the one thing is, he is a guy that I believe being five rounds the rest of this tournament actually is a disadvantage for him, because I thought you did see him slow down. I did like the referee, which I believe was Blake Grice in that fight, who basically said, Darren, you got to fight. In that third round, he wasn't doing anything. He was just going around in circles. And to me, he is a guy that it's just, I think Koji Horiguchi has put the blueprint out there of what you got to do to beat Darian Caldwell. When he gets the fight to the ground, because we know that's what he's going to do, is you got to make him work and tire him out. And that's what I think if you're out of Borax, you got to do. My number three and number four, actually two guys are going to meet in the next round, and that's Emmanuel Sanchez and Daniel Vichel. I think Daniel Vichel may have the best overall game outside of Patricio Pitbull in this tournament, whether we're talking about on the feet, on the ground, whatnot. They're my 3-4. I put Adam Borax number five. And to me, one of the things that was very interesting about how the selection show played out is how the first four guys in this tournament all picked the date they wanted to be on. And the fact of, after the first four picks are out there, no one picks Adam Borax.
Yeah, he's the guy you don't want to fight. And he's the guy who, I mean, him and McKee are absolutely, to me, the two fighters you don't want that aren't the champion. They just look so explosive. It's like everything they do is unbelievable. I mean, Borax and McKee, I just would stay away, because they are ready to get in and get out and get that fight-ending fight. I mean, it seemed like the priority for guys was the date. Or maybe that's what they said so they could seem like they weren't picking and choosing fights. But it did seem like the priority was whether they fight in December, January, February, or March. You know, Borax mentioned he was kind of hurt. He picked January, which is kind of weird. Like, why not just pick March? But regardless, people were avoiding Borax. And it was Patricio Pitbull using the championship's advantage that forced Caldwell out of the Pedro Carvalho fight and put Caldwell in there with Borax. So I think for Caldwell, it's a tough fight. I can understand your trepidation for him. I mean, my four and five are the guys you have at three and four. It's Sanchez, Weichel. I have Sanchez above him. I think this is a great fight. Two guys who are probably incredibly well rounded. Seven is obvious. It's Pedro Carvalho, I think, and I think Derek Campos is number eight.
Yeah.
So I think we kind of have the guys in their own little way. For Carla, again, just going back to him, he's not the most exciting guy to go with. I just feel like he has a real easy game plan to implement.
You got to do something when you're on the ground, though, man. Like, that's there true. Were times I'm watching this fight going, he's just laying there. And, like, you know, this at the end of the day, look, I understand. I mean, Darren Caldwell's wrestling is elite. There's no question about it. But it's also like, you compare it to Khabib Nurmagomedov. When Khabib gets you down, he's trying to advance position. There's just times I'm watching Caldwell and I'm like, are you trying to advance a position? And it wasn't the most entertaining fight to watch. And to me, when we go to a 5-round fight, like there are fighters that I think it's not an ideal matchup for him. Like Emmanuel Sanchez, I think would be an awful matchup for Darren Caldwell because the way he is going to push the pace. I mean, look, I do like the champ's choice here. I thought that was a nice little wrinkle that Bellator put on there. And clearly the date was what was most important for Patricio Pitbull. But I think when you kind of really evaluate what happened there, him picking Carvalho, I think is genius because obviously you take the guy, between him and Adam Borks, you know, least experienced fighters in this tournament. But what he also did is you look at, he put AJ McKee, Adam Borax, and Darren Caldwell all on one side of the bracket. So he knows two of those guys are most likely not getting to the final. That's why I love what he did. I think that you talk about game planning this tournament to maximize your abilities to get to that finals and win $1 million and who you potentially face in that final. I thought it was beautifully worked by Patricio Pitbull and his team.
Yeah, and it was an interesting choice also because it was clear that a fight between Caldwell and Pitbull was kind of was right there for the picking. After, you know, you watch Patricio Pitbull take on Juan Archuleta, and it was a really, really awesome performance by Patricio. I mean, really, it was dominant. The only round he lost wasn't that Archuleta won it. It's just watching the fight. It's like Patricio lost. It's like he had no care in the world in round two. Incredibly inactive. And allowed Archuleta to win that round. And immediately round three, four, and five, he bounced back. And he just looked dynamic. And as talented as Archuleta was, this was just a reminder of where Patricio is in the pecking order among the featherweights in Bellator. And that's at the very, very tippity top. So I think it's incredibly likely this dude marches his way to the finals, especially with the bracket he has set before him. The Caldwell fight had a little steam on it. Again, Caldwell was talking a lot of trash in between the cage. It made all the sense of the world for Patricio to kick out Pedro and make that fight with Caldwell. It didn't seem like Bellator really got too many fights they would have wanted had they made the quarterfinals. I'll tell you that much. There was, you know, poor Emmanuel Sanchez could not get that AJ McKee fight.
Well, he could have yeah. If he wanted to, but you know,
I meant the other way around,
you know, but the one thing was, is, and on Emmanuel, it was, I when I talked to him, I got the sense that one of his goals in this tournament was to get back these rematches that, you know, he lost on, get back Weichel, get back Patricio Pitbull. And he's found himself exactly in the case that he wants to be in to get those rematches.
Yeah, that's a good point. And it starts with Weichel, and I like him in that fight. I mean, you look at how Daniel Weichel fought against Cyril Rogers, and that fight was close on my book. I mean, I had it even going into round three. And then eventually it was Weichel stand up to me that won him the round over Cyril Rogers. But this was a close contest. And, you know, Weichel does not look like an absolute killer. Granted, he never has, and neither has Sanchez. I mean, Sanchez or Weichel is a matchup of the least sexy picks you could have on who's going to win. But realistically, they still could. That's where their talent level is. And, you know, Weichel looked okay at Bellator 228, but nothing to write home about where you think, man, he's going to run through Sanchez.
You know, I mean, and you mentioned a great point about how this is a selection show that didn't, I think if you're talking for Bellator's aspect, didn't necessarily go the way they wanted to. But I mean, got to give Bellator credit here because they turned everything over to the fighters. They said, you decide what you want to do. So I like that aspect. I like the way the selection show process played out. But to me, like, you know, my big takeaways from the selection show process, A, was how Patricio Pitbull and his team played this thing out, knowing that they had the last pick. And to me, the other one is the fact of no one said, I want Adam Borax. And I think that says a lot about Adam Borax. I mean, and you know, and give kudos to Derek Campos to say, you know what? I want AJ McKee. I want to take that O from him. And man, I mean, AJ, he's going to, you know, look, we can talk about how Bellator has slow build AJ McKee. But this guy is a problem for a lot of guys because I don't know how many guys are going to be able to contain that speed that he does have.
I mean, Georgi Karakanyan has been just a stalwart among non-UFC featherweights for the longest time. A really, really talented guy. AJ McKee ran through him in like the fastest Bellator knockout ever. In 8 seconds, boom, boom, boom. Lands the third punch and knocks him out cold. So AJ, I mean, his dad got the win. It was a family affair at Bellator 228. I mean, that's the guy who you look at. You know, there's a lot of steam on Borax. There's a lot of steam on AJ McKee. I think the world is hoping Borax gets past Caldwell because it would be a very fitting semifinal to have McKee versus Adam Borax take on each other, because throughout this Bellator tournament so far, those have been the breakout guys. Those have been the guys who have gotten the test. And not only have they like gotten an A, they got an A++, and they turned the test in 10 seconds. That's how amazing their performances have been. So Karakanyan, a hell of a talent, looked like a straight up jobber in 8 seconds, losing to AJ McKee. You know, honestly, AJ McKee has, to me, I think he has a great, great road to the finals, because realistically, the fight against Derek Campos is one that he should absolutely win. If he loses, that would be a big upset. And so now you're looking at a semifinal fight to get to the finals, whereas if you're Adam Borax, you got to get through Caldwell and then McKee. Or if you're Caldwell, you got to get through Borax and then McKee. So it's a tougher road for the other side of that little bracket there. But AJ McKee and Adam Borax, without a doubt, I think you're going to see one of those two guys in the finals against Patricio Pitbull.
Now, something else that happened at Bellator 228, Leandro Higo gets a win over Sean Bunch. A nice little fight in the prelims. You want to go back and watch it. I thought Sean Bunch looked really good. I mean, you know, obviously we all know Sean as a wrestler. I thought his striking looked very good, but ultimately Higo gets a win there in the second round. And I know Leandro Higo would love to get James Gallagher. He would love to fight him on the card in March when Patricio fights Pedro Carvalho, who, of course, Carvalho and also Gallagher both training out of SBG. Of course, James Gallagher got that win on Friday against Roman Salazar in 35 seconds. You know, I don't think Bellator's going to go that route at all. I just don't think they're going to put James Gallagher in that. I believe they'll go back to Ireland, I want to say in February. So I would imagine that's when you're going to see James Gallagher back inside the Bellator cage. You know, the thing about that fight, though, was like, it just seemed like Roman Salazar didn't really do much to defend the choke.
Well, it's probably because he got tagged with that knee beforehand. He's probably a little out of it, man. I mean, yeah. I mean, Gallagher went and boom, tapped him there, and he shot for a lazy takedown. And you're right. I mean, the defense level was like, it was bad. It was like, dang.
Well, it's like all he did was he put his hand over his mouth, but the referee was like, oh no, we're not playing that here. And then, just the thing was you didn't see James Gallagher, like, he was very calm and in the choke, very relaxed. He wasn't. You know, you could tell he wasn't trying to burn himself out, and he gets the win. I mean, you know, look, there's plenty of guys who want to fight James Gallagher. I just don't think Bellator is going to go the route of Leandro Higo.
Yeah, that's not their strategy right now, nor should it be. I mean, James Gallagher is a guy you can put in Ireland and have him do things like this. Roman Zalazar is an all right talent, and that's kind of the guys you got to put Gallagher up against up until you build him up and you feel comfortable about putting him in danger against Leandro Higo. I mean, James Gallagher, if you're Bellator, you look at him now, I see him as a guy you can use to build up talent. You know, you put him in Ireland for three or four fights in a row against guys who aren't necessarily contenders, guys you expect him to run through with submission victories. Once he builds up a lot of momentum, you know, once he's done taking on the Miami Dolphins of the MMA world, you can put him up against a legit guy you want to build up in the featherweight division and allow that guy to beat Gallagher to get a bit of a name value win. And then you can kind of rotate Gallagher, because currently when you look at Gallagher's upside, it's not high at all in my book. But he's got a bit of a name, and I wouldn't necessarily waste him on Leandro Higo.
And, of course, Higo was one of eight fighters who gained more than 11% back of their weight on the fight night weighs for Bellator 228. Leandro Higo weighed in 136 pounds on fight day. He was 156.8. That's a 15% gain. Also, fighters who were above that 11% threshold, Daniel Vichel, he was at 15%. Saul Rogers at 14%. AJ McKee at 12%. Georgie Carhania at 12%. And Juan Archuleta at 14%, so we'll see if any of those fighters have a recommendation in moving up weight. I mean, you look at Juan Archuleta, he gained 20.2 pounds from when he weighed in. Patricio Pitbull only gained 10 pounds, weighing in at 155 pounds. Those, to me, is always something very interesting to see those fight night weights. But, you know, really the other big takeaway from all Bellator last weekend was the what happened in the Michael Page fight? You know, look, that's a fight, Daniel, that is an example of why you don't always let social media sit there and allow, you know, make you to make a fight, because, you know, that was just, that was, look, I think Bellator does a lot of great things. That's awful matchmaking by Bellator. And, you know, the antics by Michael Page, I'm over it, man. I'm just over it. I kind of like the way Dan Morgado kind of handled that situation away. Did maybe he let his emotions get the best of him? Yes, I think he did let that happen. But you're Michael Page, like, dude, you just got brutally KO'd in your last fight. And Douglas Lima, very respectful. I mean, and one of the things is martial arts supposed to be about respect. I'm over with Michael Page. Like, and if his next fight is not against a legit Bellator welterweight, we once again have to call out Bellator for matchmaking. Because to me, Michael Page's next fight should be the winner of Friday's Andrei Kharashkov versus Lorenz Larkin.
Yeah, you could talk me into that fight big time. I mean, this fight should not have happened. Look, Page fought a guy who had four professional fights, and it looked like it. And this guy was all in on it, too. I mean, throwing the middle finger up. And Mercurialda tried to get control. He took a point away. He even called the guy a piece of S, as you kind of alluded to earlier, to like his own cornerman, which is like a move I would totally do. I'd be like, man, that guy smells. He's my boyfriend. Like, that would happen. And that's absolutely what happened. So, look, this fight shouldn't have happened. Michael Page is pretty talented. He should be fighting guys with Wikipedia profiles. He should be fighting Bellator welterweights, guys who won't – because like things like this happen where it just becomes so about the showboating that it just gets messy. When you do the showboating in between a competitive contest – it's more interesting. It's more real. It just felt real manufactured and forced, and just like Michael Page is living the gimmick. I don't think anyone who's a fan of fighting is a fan of that. For Michael Page, if you look at it from a pro wrestling perspective, it gets people to hate him at least, which, you know, if you get people to hate you, you'll get people to watch you get knocked out, and that'll make a little bit of money. So I guess I understand that. But in a sport, you know, it just screams Colby Covington to me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's like, Michael Page, do you really want to be known and compared to as Bellator's Colby Covington? Because that's where he's at right now.
I think the biggest thing where, you know, is the fact of how Page's matchmaking has been done. I mean, look, you shouldn't go from fighting Paul Daly and Douglas Lima to fighting Richard Keeley. I mean, I'm sorry, that should not be the matchups that are made. So I just hopefully, I mean, look, and I think that most likely he doesn't do those antics if he's fighting someone that he feels is a threat to him. He had no fear in that one. And just, it's one of those things of, and it's always one of these things of, I'm always concerned of, if someone sees a highlight that's not an MMA fan, how do they view MMA if that's their one view of MMA?
It would absolutely be in a negative light. And I think, you know, Michael Page would still keep his showboating against any level of fighter, but it would be constrained and it wouldn't be so over the top and obnoxious. It wouldn't be in a way where you wouldn't want to show it to someone else. So from this point forward, Michael Page has got to fight some tougher fighters.
Yeah, no, I'm totally with you there. Of course, on Saturday we had the UFC card. Of course, your big takeaway. Well,
don't forget about and it's easy to, because it wasn't Miles Jury and Benson Henderson. Benson Henderson got that decision win over Miles.
What did Miles Jury do on offense in that fight?
Yeah, I can understand why you forgot about it.
I mean, like you're sitting there watching the fight, and like, and I like the way Benson Henderson fought, but he fought a guy that just. I thought Miles Jury was just so defensive that he didn't do anything offensively.
Yeah, man, this was a big opportunity for Miles to get momentum back, new promotion, leaving the UFC, and dude, he let the fight come to him, and it's not like Benson Henderson's this super aggressive Melvin Manhoff type fighter. He's chilling, and he just completely outstruck him. So it's understandable why that fight was forgotten about, because it was not entertaining, and it was, you know, a very forgettable debut for Miles Jury.
Yeah, very, very forgettable debut. That's why I just kind of was moving past it, Daniel. but by the way, Benson Henderson, one of the quietest winning streaks in Bellator right now. He's putting himself there right back in consideration. But, I mean, look, when you look at that Copenhagen card on Saturday, man, Jared Cannonier, what a performance by him. The pace that was set out right from the start by Jack Hermanson in that fight, just, and those guys going at it, and you know, and Jared Cannonier, you know, showing that takedown defense, just a brutal TKO there, 27 seconds there in the second round. And man, when you think about what could be next for Jared Cannonier, I think the two options that stick out to you is either Yoel Romero or potentially Kelvin Gastelum versus Darren Till winner.
Yeah, man. Jared Cannonier is an exciting fighter to watch, man. I think it all starts with him, the physicality of what he brings. And that's why Cannonier, man, that middleweight division is full of some scary dudes. Mm-hmm. Paulo Costa, Romero, Cannonier, all those guys have like the high scores in that little boxing game where you punch the boxing glove. And whatever hometown they're from, those three guys have the high scores. I mean, they are some hard hitters. They hit like heavyweights, but they just happen to weigh 185 pounds the day before the fight. And Jared's in that category. It seems like he's really maturing, really figuring things out. And in that second round, he opens it, connecting on Jack Hermanson. So, yeah, huge win for Cannonier. Great performance. I mean, I kind of buried this UFC card to start, but honestly, there was quite a few interesting moments to take home. And Jared Cannonier had just, to me, the best performance of the night because of the quality competition of Jack Hermanson and the way it ended. So I signed me up for Cannonier versus Yoel Romero. I just want to see Cannonier in there with those guys with similar punching power.
Yeah, I mean, you talk about some of the other big takeaways from this UFC card. You got to look at Mark Mattson in the co-main event, just dominating performance there. His UFC debut to win in 1 minute and 12 seconds. Kutalaba and Roundtree, that was a fun fight going back and forth. Kutalaba, you know, getting the win there. Ovince St. Preux with, I think we're just calling it the Von Preux. Are we just calling it the Von Preux choke at this point?
Well, we got to call it the Von Preux choke because there's been six and this guy has four of them. That's insane to me.
And man, he was getting starched in the first round too.
He was, man. But it's like he was like, that was his defense to let him punch himself out.
Yeah, because I did feel that Michael was definitely slowing down once the second round started. But man, that first round did not go good for OSP at all. You know, some other things, you look at John Phillips getting that knockout in 14 seconds. I'm really interested to see how Jack Shore develops in the UFC. I think that's my other big takeaway of seeing how he can kind of develop inside the UFC.
Yeah, he looked really good with that submission win over Nolan Hernandez, and Mark Diakis defeated Lando Venetta via unanimous decision. Just kind of bounce back on what you've already talked about. Mark Madsen, 35 years old. He's a bit up there in age, but he's a star in Denmark, right? Like, I'm sure that to be such a good Olympic hero for the country and then to come out and just destroy Danilo Bellardo in 72 seconds. Mark Madsen's got to fight on every Denmark card. So I'm excited to see him fight. Man, Kudalaba, just spoiler alert, Khalil Rountree still needs to work on his takedown defense. I mean, Kudalaba just took him down, finished him. You mentioned the Von Prue choke. The other two main card fights, you had Nicholas Dalby, Alex Oliveira. Man, a fight in which there was a really bad stand-up in the third round. Oliveira was on top, and for some reason that fight was stood up, and I did not understand it. But Dalby still won a close one. I think he called out – no, Gilbert Burns beat Gunnar Nelson. He called out Neil Magny, I think. So Burns beat Nelson. It was kind of a well-rounded fight. Both guys good grapplers, but they still struck with each other. And Burns got that win. I think he's like 4-0 at welterweight, and he called out Neil Magny. So, you know, that's a fight to make, I guess, if you're the UFC. I don't know if I would, but Burns looked all right against Gunnar Nelson, getting the victory.
Of course, speaking of that welterweight division, Usman Covington's now official. That's going to be UFC 245. I really think the UFC missed a boat on not putting Covington on that DC card. Not to make this political, but I think for your UFC, you're trying to get a lot of attention on a fight night card. Colby Covington would have brought a lot of attention to that fight night card in DC.
No, I totally agree with you. We talked about it. I think it was a missed opportunity because Donald Trump, you know, he would have said something. He would have sent someone there. It would have been a whole deal.
Oh, the Trump family would be there. You know, and hell, since it's in the backyard of the White House, look, it's you can say whatever you want about Colby Covington, but you know what? He's got the most powerful man in the world on his side, so he's doing something right there. But yeah, it was I didn't watch the UFC card live for the most part. I watched a little bit of in my hotel room. It was nice to kind of start my Saturday morning, just turn on ESPN Plus and the fights were on. That was kind of a nice start to the day.
Yeah, man, that's why I really love these international cards. It's a nice little flavor to start the day. It gets tiring to watch these things at night. And granted, there was still MMA content at night with Bellator. But it's nice to get that under your belt. You can start it off in the beginning of the day and watch the mixed martial arts action.
Of course, we're going to talk about Bellator 229 and UFC 243 here. Coming up after the interview portion, which is coming up now, you're going to hear my conversation with Lewis Smolka and Tyler Diamond. Of course, Lewis is going to recap his recent win at UFC Vancouver against Ryan McDonald. And you're going to hear from Tyler Diamond as he previews his fight on Saturday against Justin Lin at Pure Combat in California. Joining me now here on the MMA Report, it's man, it's coming off a victory this past weekend, UFC Vancouver. Lewis Smolka got the win in the first round, TKO over Ryan McDonald. Lewis, as always, man, I appreciate the time. How much of going to the body was a big part of the game plan in this one?
It was a big part of the game plan. He's a taller dude. He had reach, so it was going to be kind of hard to get to his head. He could definitely keep us on the outside with straight punches and stuff. So we wanted to go to the body early just to kind of confuse him and get as much damage in as possible.
And, of course, the stoppage comes, right as the first round was coming to an end. Did anything Ryan did in the fight surprise you?
Not really, no. Nothing, like, shocked me too much. We were kind of ready for it. I mean, he did good on moving his legs out of the way. We're trying to low kick him too because he didn't really defend the low kicks, but he did a good job of defending it. So because his last fight, he got low kicked a lot. So we're going to try to take advantage of that. But he did a good job of kind of keeping his legs at like they were at weird angles for me to kick. So he did a good job, I guess, defending the low kicks.
After the fight was over, you talked about, having to go away for your family, going to Big Bear to train for this one. In terms of being away from the family, I mean, I think anybody can kind of relate to that. But for you, how tough is that in terms of, like, is it kind of like just like, do you feel like maybe sometimes you have to do that to be in full concentration of the fight?
It was just a nice getaway, you know. It was a really long camp and I was just pretty like worn out and drained, you know, like mentally and physically. And so going up to like a new area, just seeing some new things is kind of refreshing, you know. It's a beautiful place up there, and It was nice to kind of like just like look at some new stuff, kind of be in nature, you know.
And of course, you get the win, big win for yourself. And I thought it was interesting you talked about, you know, hey, I kind of feel like I'm always fighting for my job here. Is that good or bad pressure?
I don't know. I guess I think it's whatever you can make of it, you know. It comes down to the person at that point. For me, it's like, you know, it gets the better of me sometimes, but I try to, you know, like just take my CBD and like let the anxiety go away and stay focused, you know. Dude, this fight, like right, like when I woke up in the morning, I was freaking the fuck out. Like I was freaking out. My heart was like beating through my chest. I was like, man, I can't even deal with this anymore. I need a new job. It's not even the fight itself. It's the buildup. It's the anticipation, the anxiety. I need a new job. I hate this. And I was like, yo, dude, what the fuck is wrong with me? And I took some CBD. I got the Miss Mary Jane's packets, and I like dumped it in a water bottle, and I chugged it. And like immediately, I felt my heart rate go down, and I was like, all right, I'm done being a bitch.
Have you ever had that type of anticipation before?
Yeah, no, it's like that a lot. This one was pretty bad, but you know, it's like that a lot of the time.
I'm a big CBD user. I'm a big fan of it. I take it every day. You know what? And we obviously a lot of MMA fighters are, you know, use CBD, you know, daily. What do you see as the biggest advantages for you in using CBD? Is it about the recovery?
Yeah, it's the recovery and like the ability to kind of like keep you calm, you know. It doesn't really affect your sobriety too much. I would liken it to like if you lit up, like, you know, like you come home and you're all stressed out or whatever, traffic sucks. You like light a candle and like breathe in and you're like, okay, I calm down a little bit. It's kind of like that, but like it doesn't go away when you leave the candle. You know what I'm saying? Like it kind of just stays with you. That's kind of what I would liken it to.
I was listening to Ben Folks where he was talking about a conversation he had with you and talking about, obviously, you know, with, you know, quit drinking alcohol. And he mentioned that kombucha was like the thing you turned to. What was it about kombucha that got you to turn to it?
It was like there's like a little bit of alcohol in it. So it's like just enough to like it gives you like a little something, you know, like it's fermented too. And like it just, I don't know, it was just like something to drink, honestly. It was like it had some sugar in it, like, but it was like it's sweet, but there's not too much sugar in it and stuff. It's just like it was just something to like to drink, you know, something else to like to mess with. And it's a probiotic, and like it helped me while I was cutting weight, you know, and it's just something that stuck with me.
Obviously, you know, going up 35, you talked about, you know, having to just eat all the time to keep on this weight. And you mentioned about sometimes it's food that may don't necessarily love to eat. What's a part of the diet that you just, you know, they feed it to you? You're just like, oh, I don't want to eat this.
Like, I mean, it's just the portion size, you know, like, I'm not a big breakfast guy. I've had to start eating breakfast. Like in the morning, I don't like eating breakfast. Like, I just don't like it. I normally get up right before practice, and I don't want to eat right before I go work out. Like, I just don't want to do it. So, like, I've been having to, like, find ways around that. Right now I'm doing, like, protein shakes, and, like I'll have, like, a Nature Valley bar or something and keep it light. But, like, that's not really quite enough, so I got to go and eat more, you know? And it's like, I just don't want to eat all that time, you know? I'm not used to eating breakfast. So I'm not used to eating constantly. It's just different.
Is there any thoughts of going back to 25?
Not really. The last 5 or 10 pounds really hard for me. Like for other guys, like I know there's people that weigh more than me. Like Joe B, I think it's like 160 or whatever. But like for him, he's short, so he's cutting into like muscle and fat. I'm tall, so when I get down to the end of it, I'm like cutting into like bone and like organ. I feel like because there's nothing else left, and it's just. I don't really want to do it.
Of course, another win here, you know, 2-3 here now for you. When do you want the next fight to take place?
Ideally, I'd like to fight in, like, November. That'd be super cool if I could do that. That'd be a great, like, time for me. I think I'd be, like, well-rested, healed up, and ready to go.
Any thoughts on who you want to fight next, or is it just kind of like, just send me the contract and let's go?
Yeah, I didn't really think too much about it. Like, I don't know. I've just been focused, like, for, like, the past, like, 4 months on Ryan McDonald. Like, that was it. Like, that's all I thought about. And now it's just like, yeah, I want to fight again, but I don't really know who, you know?
And we look forward to seeing when that next fight may take place. Lewis, man, as always, I appreciate the time. Congratulations on the victory. Of course, let me know that you can follow you out on social media and those sponsors that have been to help you out, man.
Yeah, thank you to Miss Mary Jane CBD, G Fuel Energy, Virus, wearing their stuff right now, Defend Hawaii, Defense Soap, Citizen Water. They've been helping me out a lot too. Just everybody, man. Anyone I forgot, I'm so sorry. But like, just thank you everyone for helping me out. It's been a lot, you know. It's been a rough journey coming up here and stuff. And just, I appreciate the support.
Joining me now here on the MMA Report, a man who stepped up on just a couple of days' notice to fight in his hometown is Tyler Diamond. Tyler, appreciate the time. Did you ever think you would fight in your hometown again?
No, I did not. I thought that was out of the realm of possibility. But here we are.
And of course, the unfortunate situation, you were supposed to have that title fight in LFA. And everyone, you know, knows what's happened there. Kind of an unfortunate situation for LFA as they kind of get their TV deal squared away. I mean, when you get the phone call that the event's been canceled, is it just like, is it one of the lowest of the lows you've had in this sport?
Yeah, it sucked pretty bad. I mean, you know, you're depending on money coming in. You're depending on finally fighting. I mean, I've only fought once this year. Like, that's pretty pathetic for a guy like me who likes being as active as I can be. So it was just disappointing, super disappointing, you know. So it is what it is. We got something new on the horizon now here in a couple days, so I'm happy about that.
And it feels like this year has kind of been the year of opportunities that just haven't happened for you. You know, potentially yeah. Short notice opportunities in various organizations. You know, I think people can kind of figure out the organization who they are. I mean, like, how do you not let that get you down?
You know, it's a lot of stuff that's been out of my control. So I just always remind myself, like, hey, let's not get upset over things like we have no control over. You know, they're unfortunate, but there's nothing I can do to change any of that. This sport is just so crazy. You know, you can literally go from one day you're fighting for the LFA belt to literally the next day you get called and you're fighting in your hometown. And then the next day you get called and you can be in the UFC, you know, like, this is such a wild, wacky sport, you know, it's so new and things are just crazy, you know.
You know, short notice fights, they happen all the time in this sport. What would you say is the biggest advantages to having a short notice fight?
Man, you know, short notice fights are tricky. They're only advantageous if you're ready, you know, like a lot of guys will take short notice fights, but they're not exactly ready. I don't know if they just got to pay their rent or what, but in my situation, I had a 25-minute fight coming up in a week and a half. So for me, there's all kinds of positives. I don't see any negatives in this at all. Like, I'm going to get paid. I'm going to get a win. And then to boot, I get to fight in my hometown. So it's great for me. So, I mean, I would say if you're in shape, there's nothing but positives to come out of it, you know, but you got to be ready.
And the opponent here, Justin Lin, you know, on Monday when you get this fight, you find out the opponent, is it merely just, hey, well, let's try to find some footage on this guy, you know, try to get some of the basic intel down and then, you know, kind of put together what you want to do?
Yeah, so I'm actually looking at the time right now. I think I literally got notice of this fight like 23 and a half hours ago. Al just threw out that he found an 8-4, 145er, and I immediately was just like, yes, like as if I had to say yes right then and there in order to get the fight, you know, it's like I had to snatch it or it'll go away. So at that point, I didn't care who it was. I heard it was a 45er. I heard he was 8-4 and I didn't care. So I just said, yes, let's do it. And then he told me the name and then I looked the kid up and he's tough. I like the fight a lot. Like I did not want to take a short notice fight against a garbage can. Like I'm better than that, you know, like I'm 10-1, one of the best fighters in the world, knocking on the door to get in the UFC. Like, the days of fighting trash cans are over. Like I should never have an easy fight in my life. And, this guy certainly, is not an easy fight. So I'm excited for that.
How many times in your career have you been given, have not really been given the opponent's name? And you just said yes.
I would say about half of my fights I've said yes before I looked anything up on them. You know, I'm just confident and, you know, yeah, it just is what it is. Like, I mean, I'm just confident in my abilities. You know, I shouldn't have to, look up someone early in my career. I didn't feel like I had to look up someone super extensively before I took the fight necessarily.
You mentioned about how you like this matchup. What about it do you like so much about it?
Well, number one, I like that he's tough and, he's just not going to lay down, you know, like I said, the days of fighting trash cans are over. You know, I didn't want to come back to my hometown and fight some dude that I knew I could sleep in the first round or something. Like, I'm going to have to fight this guy. So I like that he's tough. I like that he's durable. I respect the hell out of him for taking this fight on 5 days notice or whatever. Like, that's super commendable. Obviously he's in shape and he's ready or else he wouldn't have taken that. So, yeah, I just like that it's going to be a tough fight. I like his fighting style. Like, he's going to bring it, and that excites me.
Ed was telling me that you recently got married. So how has that changed the fighting career?
Man, I wish I could say it's changed anything, but it really hasn't. It's just maybe me and her, everything feels the same. Like, great, like it's always been. I live down in Sac part-time. She lives up north where we want to settle down. So it's kind of weird. Like, usually when you marry someone, you move in with them and this and that. Like, we kind of did the opposite route. We lived with each other for a long time, and then she had to go back up north to finish school and get a teaching job, and I'm here. So it's weird. It's like we live together kind of sometimes. We see each other, like, but it's good. Like, A lot of women would not put up with that. They would not like that at all. And, you know, she don't necessarily love it, but like, she's supportive because like, she sees the end goal in all of this, you know? So, I'm pretty lucky and fortunate in that way that she fully supports what I'm doing.
What grade does she teach?
Right now she teaches 6th, 7th, and 8th. Okay. She's a PE teacher. So she teaches kids how to get up off their butt and get going, which is a big problem nowadays.
Yeah, my wife's a kindergarten teacher. So, yeah, it's kind of her schedule, my schedule can be different, especially during football season when I'm on the road a lot. Yeah, it's I know what you mean when you're apart. It's but you figure out what makes it work, you know? I mean, and yeah. Obviously with your, you know, your career, you know, there's up and downs, and there's days when you're going to be bad. I mean, is it just one of those things that she just kind of knows how to be that supportive person to kind of, you know, get you out of the dumps when you are having a bad day?
You know, I think our whole relationship has been ups and downs in terms of, like, we've never had like an ideal living situation. We've never had an ideal financial situation. Like, we've just, our relationship has been built on like really hard times, like not necessarily together. Like, we've always gotten along, but you know, like I said, there's like a lot of things that, a lot of outside things that have been hard, you know, financially, living. So we've just learned to deal with it, you know, and we get each other. We know each other very well. And, we always laugh and be like, man, we're going to look back at these past 4 years and we're just going to laugh one day, mm-hmm. You know, we're going to be sitting good. And, we're just going to laugh because we got the work ethic. We got good things going. I mean, she's going to have a full-time job here in January. We are starting our meal prep business here in a month. Okay. So I'm super excited about that. We're going to be a meal prep and delivery service. So our weekends can be wrapped up. We're not going to have weekends anymore, but that's fine. You know, like it's a sacrifice you got to make in this life, you know? So I want to get that business off and running to where eventually everything's hired out and it's just kind of self-sufficient. I just got to keep, all the ducks in a row. And, yeah, we're super excited about that. I mean, and obviously we're good people to do it. I mean, I'm a professional MMA fighter that has to make weight constantly. Like, my diet is huge. She's a PE teacher and she competes in bikini competitions, actually. So she gets leaner than a piece of bacon for her shows. So, you know, we know something, a little something about dieting and food and all that.
obviously meal prep business is kind of a booming business. You know, it's popping up all over the place. What kind of is it? I'm guessing based on what you do, what she does, it's going to be about a healthy meal prep business.
Yeah, it is. You know, like you said, it is a popular thing. But the reason why I'm jumping into it, even though it's a pretty popular thing, is there is no other meal prep companies right now in our area, which is where we want to settle, which is Butte County. There is none. Your only option there is to get stuff mailed to you. And the portion sizes are tiny. They're super expensive. So we're all doing this in-house. And yeah, everything's going to be healthy, right? But I think where a lot of meal prep companies go wrong is they make everything ultra healthy, as if like, it's for someone like me or a triathlon or triathlete or whatever. Like, I'm kind of a normal dude. Like, I can't eat like super, super, super strict all the time. Like, I have to have variety. I have to have, you know, foods that aren't necessarily like just more flavorful. Like, for instance, we're going to have street tacos on our menu. We're going to have like a lean ground turkey chili on our menu. Like, we're going to go outside the box. Like, not everything is going to be the cut and dry chicken, broccoli, rice. Like, people get burnt out on that. Like, we won't retain a customer base doing that. So we're really going outside the box. Like, I mean, we're doing everything's going to be healthy, but we're doing some different meals. Like, we're not going to follow into the typical meal prep business model of everything just being ultra healthy. And then you get sick and tired of it after a couple weeks.
Yeah, I definitely know what you mean about that. I mean, yeah, you gotta treat yourself every once in a while, but you get to treat yourself to a fight here coming up on Saturday. As always, Tyler, man, I appreciate the time. Of course, let everyone know where they can find you on social media and those sponsors that are helping you out. Anybody else you want to shout out? The floor is yours, man.
Absolutely. Thank you. Yeah, I do need to give a shout out to my sponsors because I'm not going to be able to in the cage because I'm just going to have to go buy some shorts, to be honest, such short notice for me. But I have to give a shout out to Lana's Egg Whites. I appreciate you. She's a very big part of my diet, supplies me with egg whites whenever I need them. Muscle Cups coffee plus amino acids. You can order from them on Instagram. It's the only coffee I drink now. Strike Force Energy, when I want zero calorie drinks that sort of taste like energy drinks but without the carbonation, I get Strike Force. I appreciate those guys. And then I got to give Michelle Townsend a shout out for sponsoring me. Vanessa Rutledge at Rutledge Photography, who also did my wedding and our engagement shoots, does an amazing job. Valley Maintenance in Dixon. And man, that's all I can really think of right now. But as you can tell, I have no shortage of support. That's for sure. So I appreciate all those guys.
And there was my conversations with Louis Smoka and Tyler Diamond. I really do appreciate both those men coming on this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast to talk about, in Louis's case, his recent win at UFC Vancouver against Ryan McDonald. And of course, Tyler talking about his fight on Saturday against Justin Lin, which he actually got this on Saturday. He was supposed to fight for the LFA title, and we'll see maybe if this is ultimately the fight that gets him into the UFC. I know his name has been brought up as short notice replacement in the UFC, just has not happened to this point. So we'll see what happens there. But Daniel, we do got Bellator 229 and UFC 243 this weekend. Obviously, the fight of the weekend clearly is Robert Whittaker versus Israel Adesanya. I like the Iaquinta Dan Hooker fight. After that on UFC 243, oof. Not a lot that ultimately gets me excited about that fight card. Bellator 229, I think, is a nice, you know, their version of a fight night card, essentially. Nice main event. I like the Saito Wada versus Gochi Yamauchi. Now, this is one of those Bellator fight cards where a majority of your preliminary card will actually be after the main card is over. It's actually only going to be two fights before the main card. And, I know someone sent me a tweet about this, and this is just simply it's a California card on a Friday. Bellator's not trying to start a fight at 3:30 local time. That's why there's the amount of post limbs there are. I know maybe as East Coast viewers, you maybe don't appreciate that. We'd like to have those fights on, say, at, 6-7 o'clock East Coast time, but it's about putting butts in the seats. And I don't blame Bellator at all for what they're doing here.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense, and Yeah, it's pretty simple. It's like, who's going to show up on a work day at that time to watch a fight?
Yeah, I mean, I think about this, Daniel. If the Bellator's coming to the Rio Grande, are you showing up at 3:30 to watch fights on a Friday?
Absolutely not. I literally can't.
Exactly.
I'm not going to ask for the day off work. Yeah. I'm not going to ask for the day off to go watch Bellator. Ain't no one going to do that. Maybe. I mean, like, yeah. Not even Scott Coker would ask for the day off to go watch Bellator.
No. I mean, you don't play him at all. I mean, another fight on this card, you got Joe Shelley versus Tony Johnson. You may remember Tony Johnson from this past season of Dana White's Contender Series. That's part of the main card. Also, you got Taylor Melendez taking on Amanda Polk. When I look at those preliminary cards, Joey Davis is a guy that sticks out to me. Johnny Eblen, another guy. Those are two undefeated fighters in two separate matchups. They're two guys to pay attention to. Also, Derek Anderson versus Guillerme Bamba, welterweight matchup. Of course, you know, we remember Derek Anderson as a 155er. So, to me, I think overall they've got some fights up and down this card that do make it interesting, and I'll be watching on Friday night.
Yeah, I mean, to me, both cards have two fights that really get me to the television set, and then a bunch of little things, and it's the two we started off with, right? It's Goiti Yamauchi, Syed Awad. The reason why I'm looking forward to that one is I just think that fight has, like, potential to be exciting. Yamauchi and Awad are two of the more appointment-viewing lightweight fighters on the roster, and it's a fight in which I'm thinking Yamauchi's going to come out with the victory, but it's still a fight that I can't wait to see. And then the main event, Koreshkov versus Lorenz Larkin. I mean, this is, simply put, just a high-level welterweight Bellator fight. Both these guys have gotten victory recently over not top-tier welterweight guys, but solid welterweight fighters. And now it's time to get back up on the tippity-top of the welterweight division. The winner is going to get a big-time fight. In this contest, Koreshkov's my pick, though.
When we talk about our top five fights of the weekend, it's easy for me to come up with my top four.
Yeah, but number five, you can't.
Right? I mean, like, what the hell is it? Like, to me, your top four fights are the main event and co-main event of both cards. And I mean, clearly, number one is Whitaker Adesanya. To me, number two is Koreshkov Larkin. Three, I Quinta Hooker. Four, Awad versus Yamauchi. And Eros may be a little different, but I'm sure those are four fights. But if you tell me who's the fifth best fight of the weekend, Daniel, there's not one that sticks out to me.
There's not one fight you look at and you're like, that's a banger, or that's a fight between two high level guys. Like, it's a lot of fighters who have recently struggled or fallen. I mean, honest to goodness, like, the number five fight might be a fight between Luke Jamoa and Diego Lima.
Yeah.
Like, that might be it. You know, Tai Tuivasa, Sergey Spivak's okay, but it's not a fight I'm super looking forward to. I'm only looking forward to it because I'm a fan of Tai Tuivasa. But yeah, there really isn't that compelling fifth fight. And we're talking about two different cards.
Yeah, I mean, I would maybe throw out there Justin Taffa versus Jorgen De Castro at heavyweight. That's going to kick off the UFC 243 pay-per-view. But yeah, it's, you know, usually a lot of weeks we could sit there and say, okay, we clearly know who our top five fights of the weekend are, but this is just not one of the case. But, you know, to me, I mean, look, the UFC 243 card is about one. You're putting down that $60 for one reason only, and that is Robert Whitaker versus Israel Adesanya. You know, this is obviously a huge fight down in Australia, in New Zealand. Israel Adesanya, you think about a quick rise. I mean, guys have been what in the UFC, what, less than 2 years now?
Wow, yeah, you don't really think about it, but you're right. He literally debuted February of 2018. So within 2 years, he has a chance to be the undisputed middleweight champion.
Yeah, I know. I mean, and this is one of those fights. I mean, I kind of feel like Robert Whittaker is one of the UFC champions that maybe doesn't get the notoriety that he should. And I think probably because, you know, I mean, look, he's not a – you know, he's not a guy that's going to go out there and say anything outlandish, whatnot. I mean, I think what'll be interesting in this fight is, will Robert Whitaker use grappling to try to wear down Israel Adesanya?
I think that should probably be the strategy, and I think that's going to be a smart plan, because for Robert Whitaker, And this is just a tremendous fight. I mean, this is a big time fight. I'm looking forward to it. We're going to know who's number one middleweight in the world after it's over. For Robert Whittaker, the story of this fight starts off with his inactivity due to pulling out of fights. I mean, the last time he fought was June 2018. At that time, Adesanya had only beaten Marvin Vettori and Rob Wilkinson in the UFC. That's all he had done, 2-0. So from that point forward, Adesanya reeled off win after win after win after win. And he really gained a lot of momentum. He showed great improvement from fight to fight. So in the meantime, Whitaker's just been rehabbing, having setback after setback. And you got to think he's got to get his sea legs under him when he gets in that cage. And I think it's a lot harder to do that from a striking perspective, especially against someone as dangerous as Israel Adesanya. So that's where you kind of look to implement the grappling to get in comfortable in that cage and also steal a round or two. Because I do think this fight is going to go the distance.
Yeah, I like this fight. If it goes the distance, give me Robert Whittaker all day long. I mean, I think the thing is, you know, Robert Whittaker's last two fights are against a power puncher in Yoel Romero. So it's not like he hasn't seen this type of power. I think the speed aspect may be something to play into for Israel Adesanya. And, you know, tell me if I'm wrong here. Do you get the sense that the UFC's more in on Israel Adesanya than they are Robert Whittaker?
Oh, big time, big time. And I think it's because for Adesanya, he really projects that phenom type quality way more than Whittaker. And I mean, the UFC loves that quality. The guy who might be the best mixed martial artist of all time. Robert Whittaker looks like a guy who's lucky to be the champion, whereas Adesanya to the UFC looks like a guy who is obligated to be the champion. That's kind of how I would describe it and why I think UFC is more in the Adesanya business than the Whittaker business.
I do feel like, and I know we always talk about under the radar fights, and I don't think this is under the radar, but maybe it is going under the radar just because of, you know, more about the interest about this fight card being all about the main event. But Iaquinta Hooker is a really nice matchup at 155 pounds. You know, you never know what to really make of Al Iaquinta just because of some of the issues that he's had just with the UFC. But, you know, Dan Hooker's coming off a great win against James Vick, a performance of the night bonus. I mean, you got to remember, this is a guy who's won five of his last six fights. His only loss was Edson Barboza, which was not a great performance by him. I love this matchup. I think it plays out on the feet. I don't think someone wins by knockout here. I think it's going to go all 15 minutes.
Oh, man, Dan Hooker, he has been hungry for those knockouts and his victories. I mean, I think upon first glance, you would think Iaquinta is the favorite, but you start doing some analysis and you start actually looking at the betting odds, and it's Dan Hooker who's a slight favorite over Al Iaquinta on all the books, and it makes sense because he's done more lately that gets you excited about his fight style. His knockout win over Jim Miller and Gilbert Burns and James Vick. And if anyone goes down, it's probably going to be Iaquinta. But I certainly see this one going the distance as well. Dan Hooker would be my pick. I think he's going to land more shots on the feet. I think he's going to play out primarily on the feet. And it's ironic that you look at a co-main event and you may think, oh, this is a bit under the radar. But I get what you're putting down here. All the spotlight is on the main event. This is a phenomenal fight. And it's a close one, a razor-thin contest, absolutely.
I just pulled up the betting odds, and, you know, Israel signing up Whittaker. I mean, it's essentially a pick 'em. You know, you got some big favorites on this card. Your Tile 2 Voss is nearly a 4-1 favorite. Jake Matthews is a 3-1 favorite. Maki Patolo is a 3-1 favorite. Megan Anderson's a 5-1 favorite. Khalid Taha is nearly a 2.5-1 favorite. I mean, you know, in terms of a underdog pick, I don't know who I would really go with there. I would look at Jorgen Castro at +105. It is kind of interesting looking, there's only two lines out on Bellator. Bet Online is the only one who's got a line out on Yamauchi and Awad. Has Yamauchi as a 5-1 favorite.
That's kind of crazy to me.
That is crazy. I mean, look, I think Gochi Yamauchi should be the betting favorite, but man, 5-1. Whew. If I was in Vegas, I'd probably lay a little money on Sayana Wyatt those odds.
Yeah, Awad's going to connect on the chin of Yamauchi in that fight. And if he's able to do that, you never know if he's going to turn his lights out. So I'd put some money on that one, and maybe there'll be an overcorrection. Maybe there'll be a correction when the lines come out on all the other betting books. God, the only underdog I see and I really like for UFC would be Nadia Kassim. I mean, she's plus 150 against Jae-Yoon Kim. And I personally am picking her to beat her, so I would go Kassim for my underdog on the UFC card.
Yeah, I like that pick. But, you know, this will be another fight card that I'm going to watch after the fact. I'll be in New Orleans this weekend, so we'll not be able to watch these fights live. We'll watch them after the fact. But definitely looking forward to watching Bellator 229 and that UFC 243 main event. And co-main event, of course, remember the UFC 243 was supposed to have Holly Holm versus Raquel Pennington. Holly Holm had to pull out of the fight, and Raquel Pennington has come out and said that her understanding is that they are going to reschedule that matchup. But Daniel, let's wrap up this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast by talking about some MMA news notes. Also, I do want to mention about this question I got from at Joe Daddy on Twitter, which not really MMA related, but of course the MLB playoffs started up last night, and of course my hometown Rays are playing tonight against the A's, and Joe says, can you tell me how hard it is to really get to a Rays game? Why is attendance so low? I heard on the lead that a bridge is to blame. You know, Joe, this was probably going back 6-7 years ago. We have this sporting event every year in Tampa Bay. It's called the Sneaker Soiree, where basically everyone's wearing suits, but instead of wearing dress shoes, you're wearing sneakers. And Stu Sternberger, the owner of the Rays, had this line of, the bridge is a great divide between Tampa and St. Petersburg, and St. Petersburg is where the Rays play, and of course Tampa is where the Buccaneers play, the Lightning play, and I'm a Tampa resident. For me and my office, where literally I'm sitting at right now, I'm about a 5-minute ride from Tropicana Field. I think the real reason I think this is a sporting problem and across the board, Joe, is the fact of it's been made so easy to sit at your home and not have to go to a stadium, buy a ticket, get parking, and then, you know, if you want to enjoy as Daniel likes to say, a daddy soda, it's a little expensive. Like I might be at the Lightning game tomorrow night. Daniel, I think beers are like $16.
Dude, that's insane.
No, it's like it's a 25-ouncer, so it's basically two beers in one. But yeah, you go there, you're just like, let me get this beer. They're like, oh, $16. You're like, ooh, man. It
costs $10 for a 6-pack of Budweiser.
Yeah, but look, it's and I just I'll tell you this, as I've gotten older, Daniel, I've just not really cared for baseball.
Yeah, man, I was starting to feel alive last night because the whole baseball season I was dead inside, man. The Rangers suck, and I don't care this year. But I was watching the very end of the Nationals Brewers last night, and I tell you what, I started to feel a little alive, man. Yeah, Brewers are up 3-1, eighth inning. Nationals come from behind off of a Juan Soto single, a lot of errors, and alive and well.
Felt bad for that outfielder, boy. Ooh.
Yeah, with the error, yeah, by Grisham. Oh, man.
If he doesn't get the error, it's only a tie game.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm sitting, I'm like, oh, because I like you, I was up. I had it on while I was doing some prep for this show. And I was just like, oh, man. And that is a long flight back for that guy back to Milwaukee.
Yeah, that guy and also the closer, Josh Hader.
Yeah. Go
past him and. And, yeah, I enjoyed the one-game wild card. I mean, the Nationals used their, like, two good pitchers in Scherzer and Strasburg just to get to the next round. But
look, I will say, if the Rays win tonight, and I think they play the Yankees maybe, whenever they have home games here in the playoffs, it'll be a sold-out crowd. But it's just, you know, I think that it's, you know, one of the things of where the stadium is here in the Tampa Bay area. It's like at the southernmost point of where a majority of your population is. And, you know, whether I don't think that the stadium's going to, you know, they would like a stadium to be in downtown Tampa. I just don't think it's going to happen just from a financial aspect of it, because, you know, most likely at the end of the day, you're going to have to go to the taxpayers to approve that. And in the state of Florida, you have to get 2/3 vote to get that to pass on a referendum. And I just don't think that's going to happen, but yeah, it's, I just found myself like, I can tell you, Daniel, I don't think I have watched one full baseball game all season long.
Yeah, I don't think I have either, man. Tell me this. Tropicana Field. I know there's a bridge. Would it get sold out if we had a bare knuckle FC fight? Pauly Malignani versus Vanderlei Silva, huh?
No.
Oh, no.
I love your trade because they actually are coming to Tampa October 19th for Bigfoot Silva versus Gabriel Gonzaga.
I'm so sad.
I sit there and there's these, you look at bare knuckle, and the reason Daniel's bringing this up is there was a report by FanSided, I want to say over the weekend or maybe late last week, that Vanderlei Silva was signing with bare knuckle FC. And then on Tuesday, there was an article by Guillermo Cruz and Damon Martin of MMAfighting.com saying that Vanderlei Silva is no longer under contract with Bellator and in talks with bare knuckle FC. And this is the uneasy part of this. And, you know, I've had a chance to talk to Mike Richmond a lot about bare knuckle and, you know, and kind of him telling me really what it's about. But then when you see this and you're talking about a fighter in Vanderlei Silva, that it was back in February that he noted about having concussion symptoms, where he said, quote, "I was in a lecture about concussions, and of the 10 symptoms the guy mentioned, I had 8. The symptoms would be, for example, mood swings, getting angry very fast, forgetting some things, and having some difficulty sleeping, and the fact that Vanderlei Silva is planning to donate his brain for research on concussions after he passes away." And it's a story that I would sit there, and if he is truly signing with bare knuckle, and, you know, because of course Scott Coker, you know, previously had said that before we even consider booking Vanderlei Silva for a contract, he would have to go through the medical side and have doctors clear him, you know, for his words of what he said. And for David Feldman, I would sit there and say, explain this one to me. Why do you think Vanderlei Silva should be fighting when he's already talking about all these concussion symptoms that he has?
Look, I don't get it. I mean, I get it in that Vanderlei Silva is the name. And it seems like bare knuckle's strategy, their scouting strategy, is by going to like a video store and buying UFC pay-per-views from 2006 and scouting talent. I mean, that's it. I mean, somebody got into my closet, got all my old UFC DVDs, and is thinking maybe we should book Tank Abbott. That's the funny part.
The sad part is
the other way. Yeah, it's sad because, Jason, if I gave you this question, I told you, Jason, give me the 10 fighters in this sport that took the most damage to their head. Vanderlei Silva would be in the top 10. Undoubtedly.
He might be your first answer.
Him or Liddell or Vitor. I mean, a pride guy, but Vanderlei would probably be my first answer. Also, Shogun. Those pride guys.
Would you go ahead and put JDSRE in that category?
Potentially. The thing is, the olden days of how they used to train puts those other guys in, like, because they would, I feel like they would take it every day at a violent rate in that shoebox in a gym. And yeah, man, this is some scary stuff, man. I think Vanderlei's brain's in a rough spot. Unfortunately, and it's tough to say it, but I would rather say it because that's how I actually feel than just like, oh, well, you never know what causes the symptoms. I really think Vanderlei's brain is in a rough spot because I think what causes the symptoms is your brain rattling around your skull. And unfortunately, Vanderlei's been a part of so many wars that we've seen that we know he probably has significant issues, that there's also that added layer of things we haven't seen, that day to day in the gym. So I don't want to see Vanderlei Silva compete in combat sports any longer.
Yeah, it's just sad. I mean, you know, I don't want to see Bigfoot Silva fighting. You know, we've seen what's happened to him in MMA situations, and now we're taking the gloves off of, you know, what do we expect this thing to go different? And, you know, one of the, when you think of the negativity that people have a bare knuckle, and I hear this line all the time, they're trying to make a name off aging fighters who maybe or should not be fighting. And that's the problem I see with bare knuckle. And, you know, and if Vanderlei Silva signs with bare knuckle, and that's, you know, what Fanside is saying is true, you have to look at the commission side of this and say, why are you going to give this guy a license after what he is saying?
Yeah.
And unfortunately, Daniel, there will be a commission that will give him a license to fight.
Yeah, it's like you're a joke if you're a commission that does that.
I mean, like, I just sit there and I go, like, I look at that bare knuckle event that's coming to Tampa, and there's some local fighters that I know that are on that show. You know, and one of the things I do here is the fact of it's just, you know, the financial aspect of it's just right now better. And particularly in where I live in the Tampa Bay area, there isn't local shows. There's just not. I mean, you know, a name that people now know in the UFC, Alon Cruz. Alon Cruz, I can't tell you the last time he had a local fight. You know, he was going up to Georgia. He was going to other places to fight just because there just wasn't local fights here in the Tampa Bay area. So that's why a lot of these local guys have kind of hopped on this bare knuckle train. But man, I don't want to see Vanderlei Silva fight. And I would be interested to hear the bare knuckle people and the people that are their ultimate supporters of defending why they should sign Vanderlei Silva. I don't get it. I don't understand it. And it's just sad.
Yep. 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 I agree wholeheartedly. I hope it doesn't happen because I'm absolutely done watching Vanderlei Silva fight.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. Of course, the other thing we want to mention, Nick Newell, of course, we mentioned, what was it, probably 2 weeks ago, he was on the verge of signing with Bellator. It's now official. He will make his next fight in Bellator 232, under a multi-fight deal. He's going to take on Manny Moro. And I know, you know, some people were kind of upset with this fight booking. Daniel, not surprised.
Yeah, not surprised at all. I mean, it's something where you just generally expect stuff like that. And look, man, I think Neil is going to have a lot of wins in Bellator.
Oh, I think Nick Newell will have a lot of success. And even when you talk about the upper echelon of the 155-pound division, I think he'll have some good success. I really do. He is a very talented fighter. You cannot deny that, but let's not be shocked that this is the fight booking they put him up against. I mean, it's not like they're going to sit there and say, hey, how do you fight Brent Primus in your first fight? No, that's not going to happen.
Yeah, that's not going to happen. You got to build the guy up before he comes crashing down.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, it's just wasn't a surprise at all. I mean, just, you know, the whole Nick Diaz line, not surprised. I mean, you're not surprised by that matchup. I mean, and one of the things I did notice is I did Scott Coker after Bellator 229 did talk about how they're going to have a busy fall and, you know, trying to get some of these guys that potentially, you know, were unable to advance in the featherweight tournament to sit there and advance. Also, Julia Budd, Chris Cyborg, book for January. I saw this clip on social media where Julia Budd basically said, yeah, I was in LA this past weekend and it basically seemed like they already feel like Chris Cyborg's a champ, and it's giving me some motivation.
Yeah, get motivation, because I mean, that's how it's gonna be, man. Poor Julia Budd. But
if
yeah,
Julia Budd wins that fight, like, oof, that's not great for Bellator, because they're paying Chris Cyborg a ton of money.
They might want to renegotiate that contract.
Yeah, then Cain Velasquez apparently, you know, in talks with the WWE. Are we just saying Cain Velasquez's MMA career is over?
Yeah, I think it's over. He's doing things in the ring that take some time. He's training a lot in wrestling. You can tell by his ring work.
Some of those moves are like, Cain, you might get hurt, man.
Yeah, you might, but it's kind of funny that a guy who is so injury prone seems to be doing just fine in the wrestling ring.
That makes you wonder why.
I think, first off, you got to think he's taking care of it. Because the thing is, in pro wrestling, you would be surprised how many guys wrestle injured. So you know how to take care of your body in the ring, because everything you're doing is planned in terms of, yeah, like, you're in charge of it. Whereas you go and, like, you train, you spar, you're not coordinating crap. It's just reaction. Oh, my knee bent that way. Oh, my shoulder bent that way. Wrestling, you can protect it, but damn, it doesn't look like Kane's doing much protecting with what he does. So, look, I think it's going to be Kane versus Brock at WrestleMania. So finally, Brock Lesnar can get a win over Kane.
Oof. I the question is, who's the next MMA fighter goes a wrestling route?
God. I don't know, man. I think Conor McGregor. I mean, not really. He wouldn't dedicate.
We've seen Conor at more Bellator events than we have UFC events.
That's a hell of a point. That's a hell of a point.
I was sitting there going back and watching Bellator 227, and I was like, boy, if you gave Scott Coker Conor McGregor, I think Scott Coker could do some things.
Oh yeah, he's a hell of a promoter, and he'll figure it out.
Yeah, I mean, maybe we'll see Conor at some point. Maybe. I wonder if Conor shows up November 2nd MSG.
I wouldn't be surprised. It's about time we saw him in the aerial show. It's about time for him to come inside the cage.
Yeah, but man, that is not that far away, man. I'll be in New Orleans this weekend. Head there on Saturday. Bucks Saints. So that'll be on Sunday. Looking for that. Then Daniel, the following week, I head to London.
That'll be a whole lot of fun.
I would say it was funny is we're sitting on the plane going to L.A. and we're waiting, you know, kind of for, you know, the plane to get bored. And my boss looks at me and goes, you do realize we're 2 weeks from going to London, right? I was like, wow, I had not realized it was that soon.
Holy crap. That's,
yeah, we leave next Thursday night. So next week on the podcast, me and Daniel will talk about everything that happened this weekend. Get you ready for UFC Tampa. I'm actually going to tape some interviews in person. Look for have Eric Anders on the show. I think Tim Elliott's going to be on the show. So going to go meet up with those guys and kind of have a longer sit down type conversation with those guys. So looking forward to that. I wish I was in Tampa for UFC Tampa, but I won't be here. And I don't think I'll sit up till, well, it's a 5-hour time difference in London to watch those fights. Yeah, I don't think I'll do that.
Yeah, don't do that. You can figure out another time to watch it.
Yeah, so. I think I'll watch it on the plane back on a Sunday night.
That's the best way to spend your time on the plane.
That was like, I tell you, man, when I was in L.A., I was up at 5 a.m. on Saturday and Sunday morning.
That's I have a nightmare thinking about doing that, Jason. How you do it is beyond me.
Well, no, it's just because of, you know, the time difference, and you just I remember I rolled over the clock, go, oh my god, it's 5 a.m. Jesus, just want to sleep.
I feel you. That's me all the time.
Yeah, but that is going to wrap it up for this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Podcasts. The podcast will be on iHeartRadio here. Should be about the next week or so. Just got the notification on that one, so look out for that. Also, be sure to hit up the MMA Report on YouTube. Hit the subscribe button to check out some of my latest interviews. Going to be putting up some new interviews up on the MMA Report YouTube channel this week, so be sure to check out that. So let's go wrap up for this week's edition of the MMA Report podcast, which comes out every Wednesday on RadioInfluence.com.
This is a cannabis podcast. Quick fix on Radio Influence.
So when did you start smoking?
First time I did it was I was 18 at Gaither High School, and I was in TV production, and I was with some.
In class.
I was, yeah, that's cool, right? I was with some cool kids, okay. Let's say. And we went out to this kid's, I don't know, maybe had a Camaro or something. And I was very worried. I go, am I going to smell? Because we got to go back in class. Yeah. They're like, no, this stuff doesn't smell. Which they're showing me. It's like, it's chronic back then. It's good stuff. Sure. These were rich kids.
Mm-hmm.
And I took a hit. And look, I don't know if I got high the first time. But I remember going to class and just kind of zoning out. Yeah. And it not really being a big deal either way.
For really?
Why do they say the first time you don't get high?
Bro. Actually, the first time I hit it, I was scared of it. And I didn't inhale. And then, you know, I was with my boy, Tony Mayberry. And we were at the Cactus Club, and I was riding home. He goes, bro, hit it like a man. That's what I remember saying, hit it like a man.
Was this a blunt?
No, it was like a one hitter. Okay. Kind of, you know. So I was like, get out of here, man. So I hit it, and I think I almost swallowed. So I coughed. And a big cloud came out. Tony goes, nah, you'll be all right. So now I jump in my car. And I'm driving from the Cactus Club home. I live right at Culbeth Isles, and I'm on Swan. And when I was on Swan and Manhattan or Henderson, I was higher than giraffe pussy, brother. I mean, I've never been that high before.
You didn't know how to get home, did you?
No, I didn't. I think it took me a half hour to get home. Yep. And I lived about a mile and a half. Cops were following me. People on the phone were calling because they're telling people I'm high. Like, I'm sitting there looking in the mirror, and the lady's on the phone. I'm like, she's calling cops. And I was almost ready to turn around and go back the other way. It was bad.
And you were 35?
35.
The Cannabis Podcast can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.